The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we have been talking about spiders, and in particular, spiders' webs, and mentioned a variety of things that are absolutely unique structures, physical properties that are impossible to have been brought into existence by some kind of random evolutionary process. And a person who looks at this order and pattern in God's creation and comes away with some kind of man-made scheme to provide a basis for how these structures came into existence is unbelievably thoughtless and foolish. I am well aware of the fact that the majority of folks in the world probably accept that, many of them highly intelligent, and we addressed ourselves to some of those problems much, much earlier, and I won't go back and repeat all of that here. There are all kinds of things about spiders that are absolutely unique. Among other things, they have eight simple eyes. If you were to look at the head of a spider, what I'm reminded of, sometimes you'll see pickups, particularly out west, they'll have umpteen lights on it. And you see the front end of a spider, and it reminds me of that, all these eyeballs sitting there looking at you. And they're just very unusual, that's all. I also did not mention in the introduction the fact that they have fangs and claws, and we have not seen these structures per se on any of the other organisms that we have been discussing up to this point. I mentioned last time in the course of a comment that evolutionists usually attach the word adaptation to the web spinning apparatus, and in some cases to other parts, the fangs and claws. These are simply adaptations. These are things that the organism has developed as a result of the need or as a result of the environment somehow. And in modern biology textbooks, you will see this term over and over and over again. And I want to be sure that those of you who know the Lord as your Savior can respond to it correctly. The adaptation simply carries with it the idea that there is something external outside the organism that is responsible for bringing that particular thing into existence. And we talked earlier, much earlier on a program, about how external phenomena do not have the capability of making creative additions to the genetic material. And while that's a very common ploy in trying to provide plausible views of the structures themselves, the fact is they really don't make any sense. And again, for those of you that are laymen, and I would assume this includes most of you, you, by that I mean simply you don't have much experience in science and don't understand all the jargon. I'm just telling you that it really doesn't make good sense, and you don't need to feel put upon, browbeaten when you run across the use of all of these terms. Now, we need to talk a little bit about venom, I think, since this group of organisms contains a number that have the capability of producing venom. Now, I sometimes make the comment to my entomology class that when you're messing around with arthropods, it is well for you to know which end to watch out for. Granted, a lot of them are small, some of them aren't, but are they going to bite you or are they going to sting you? Now, if you don't know the difference in those two, you may get yourself into difficulty. Now, in most cases, I'm thinking about the insects in particular, scorpions would fit into this. In case of the insects, the stingers are actually modified ovipositors. So it is a stinging process, and these structures are going to be on the back part of their body. Many of them are going to have that they bite and they have fangs, hollow fangs in the case of the spiders, that they will use to inject venom. Now the venom, I don't consider myself an expert in toxicology, but as far as I am aware, the venom is always a protean of some sort. Now proteans, of course, are simply chains of amino acids. And again, we've had occasion to talk about this briefly a number of times. I had a young lady in one of my classes the other day, a couple of years ago now, we were talking about the structure of proteans, and she popped up and asked me, said, "Dr. Henson, do you mean proteins?" Well, I am using the, in my mind, preferred pronunciation for the word. If you pronounce it protein, and this is a somewhat recent fad, was not always pronounced that way, but anyway, pronounce it any way you want to, but understand what we're talking about when we use the term. If you pronounce it protein, you really don't have any way of knowing the correct spelling. So that's not the reason I pronounce it correctly, but it is a reason to do that. These are organic compounds that are produced by the spider, by the organism. And at some point, this would get us to a consideration of why the organism itself is not affected by this chemical. How is it possible for an organism to produce a venomous material that has no effect on the organism itself and yet in some cases can be lethal on others? And there is more than one possibility for an answer to this, but it still is rather interesting. There have been instances, for example, where scorpions have stung themselves. And where that has occurred, they usually will die. Or if you have a fight and one will sting another, usually that's fatal. And they say, well, how in the world is it possible for an organism to ingest, if these have sucking mouth parts, how can they suck the venom out of a body and not be affected by it? Well, that one's very simple. Proteans are part of a normal diet, and proteans are proteans. They're chains of amino acids, and in the process of digestion, the bonds are broken between the amino acids, and they are simply broken down into the individual amino acids, and these are not poisonous. So if the processes are capable of being digested, if the organism is able to run them through their digestive tract, they probably are not going to cause any difficulty. If, on the other hand, they are injected into the body, then that's a very different proposition, and this is the thing that causes difficulty. Now, I want to make a comment here, and at least with regard to the reptiles in the United States, and we have basically four poisonous reptiles here, copperheads, rattlesnakes, coral snakes, and water moccasins. Now, you think of those, you think of the two poisonous spiders, black widow and brown recluse, the latter, by the way, being much more dangerous than the former. You think of scorpion stings and whatever else may occur to you. My statement to you is this, that none of this venom is normally lethal to a normal healthy adult, and I have tried to phrase carefully what I have said to you. There are reptiles in other parts of the world that are lethal. You don't get some help in a matter of a few minutes, you're going to die. And mambas and bushmasters and a number of the other snakes fall into that category. Ours here really don't. There are the qualifications involved in that statement of these. When I mean normal, I mean a person that does not have an allergic reaction to the venom. Now, any person who has that kind of a reaction to the venom can be dead in minutes. This is why it's reasonably important for you to know if you have that kind of a reaction. That kind of a reaction, in this country, for example, there are many times more people who die every year of insect stings than there are reptile bites. but it's because of that allergic reaction to the effects of the venom. I had an immensely interesting episode years ago in one of our insect collecting field trips. We were up at a lake 50, 60 miles away from school, and one young man had gotten some kind of wasp in his net and was transferring into his collecting jar and was handling it carelessly and got stung. And he came and told me that it itched and hurt and so on. And I said, well, you let me know if all this changes, you see me quickly. About a half an hour later, he came back and he was having hives. There were sections of his skin that were red and puffy, and he had heart palpitations. And I gathered up all the crew and we got in the car and I drove 70, 80 miles an hour back down from where we were to get to the hospital. As it turned out, I went through a speed trap out on 291, not far from the university. And I pulled in and told the state trooper that was there what the problem was. And he accepted my testimony about it. And we were only about a block or two from the school at that point. We got him into the infirmary, and he was being given shots there of adrenaline, I think. And I saw something I have never seen before. As a consequence of the effect of those shots, you could see the hives disappear. These huge red areas on the skin simply were disappearing before our eyes. And I'm of the opinion that if we had not gotten back reasonably quickly, he would have had very serious effects from that. But if you don't have that kind of a reaction, and if you are not bitten, if you're bitten on or stung on your limbs, away from the trunk of your body, it probably will not be lethal. And I'm sure there are many people who have been bitten by spiders, including brown recluse and black widow, that really were unaware of it. They may have been aware of an itching, or in some cases, of the dissolution of the skin. So you end up with continuing problems as an effect of the venom itself. Well, we'll pursue a little bit of discussion about this later. I would simply observe here that these glands that produce this venom, these delivery structures, are absolutely unique. There is no way possible you can attempt to explain these on the basis of evolution. They are, again, testimony to a wise, intelligent creator.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.